A very well-known medrash in the beginning of Parshas Bamidbar is important on two fronts for Jewish identity in the modern world. I've spoken a lot recently about the ability to merge and blend between nationalism, parochialism, narrow or seemingly narrow and insular activity, ritual, religion, Torah study, state building, and the universalist tone of our role as HaKadosh Baruch Hu's representatives, challenging the world morally, challenging the world philosophically, theologically, but also trying to improve the world, trying to advance the world in the way that Avram did, who challenged them conceptually and introduced the revolution of consciousness religiously, but also delivered welfare and prosperity and advance the human condition. And this is a medrash that highlights that. And it's a sad medrash because it's obviously written at the time that the Romans were pursuing the Jewish people and destroying the Beis HaMikdash. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, had these nations just realized how important the Beis HaMikdash is to the world, and not just the building, but the Jewish people, and pivoted or centered on the Beis HaMikdash, but the building as well, instead of attacking it, they would have surrounded it with sentries, with protective agents. And there's a sad lament that, and this is really the second part of the Medrash, that at certain points of history, the world is still broken. And the world isn't able to realize that the Jewish Ark is beneficial to the international well-being and that Jews are not in it for personal glory or for personal luxury, but to advance humanity at large. And at Yeshua ben Levi's day, they just didn't get it, and obviously he was living at the dawn of a 2,000-year era in which they continued not to get it and not to understand it. So there really are two messages. One message is that the world, and for us, not the Midrashim aren't expected to be read by Goyim, by non-Jews, but one message is that, okay, the world may seem broken, but don't abdicate that sense that one day the world will be restored to a capability of harmonizing Jewish interests and universal interests. And of course, the sub-message is for us, we're not meant just to take our cues from the broken state or the flawed state of reality, but to maintain the overlap between those two programs and those two agendas, even though the world around us isn't yet ready to accept it. And to stress this universalist point, and he cites Shlomo, and Shlomo lives in a universalist period, and a lot of Jews today have a very difficult time sensing that universalist role because we're 2,000 years downstream in a very national experience of survival, protection, and then, of course, redemption, rebuilding, recovery from the Holocaust. So we are certainly embedded in a 2,000-year period of nationalism and national and internal interests. And maybe now that we have a state, I think we're slowly emerging from that and returning to the world stage and exerting our influence, not just politically and militarily, but part of the Medrash talks about the fact that if not for the Beis HaMikdash, and that's for the Beis HaMikdash, it's a very interesting language in the Medrash. It says, V'lo tamar Beis HaMikdash, Eli Lei Yisrael, if not for the Jewish people, Lo haya matar yored, V'lo hashemesh zarachas, rain wouldn't fall, the sun wouldn't shine, and of course, crops, agriculture, prosperity itself would grind to a halt. And it is fascinating. Obviously, the Medrash is referring to the supernatural element that HaKadosh Baruch Hu maintains the world because there's a people in this world that have accepted his Torah. If not for Hashem's presence in this world, there'd be no purpose to this world. It'd just be a planet. Hashem doesn't need there to be a population on one planet just for the sake of nature shows. But Hashem wants people to embrace him and to find his presence. And we're leading that crusade. We're leading that process. But when I was reading this Medrash this morning, I was thinking about how ironic it is that one of the fields of technology that the Jews, the State of Israel, has been particularly successful in advancing is agriculture. We sometimes speak about Israel's technology militarily, obviously Israel's economy, Israel's politics, the protection of democracy, startup nation, engineering, technology. I've spoken recently about Israel converting into a superpower to heat the world and to light the world and to provide energy for the world. And in the next 10, 15 years, Israel will probably be converted into one of the major world suppliers of energy and at the cutting edge of medical technology, which I think Israel is starting to advance. But even over the last 20, 30 years, Israel, and traditionally has always been at the cutting edge of agricultural reform. I think people in Western civilizations probably are less exposed to it, because I think that countries such as the United States, countries such as England, they're less exposed to it, because I think these are thriving agro-economies, less dependent on Israel technology. But those who have traveled to Africa or have studied the impact of Israeli agricultural technology, agricultural tools and methods, whether the famous Netafim, the drip irrigation, or even others, even there are many quieter ones, protecting certain types of crops, maintaining grain integrity on the delivery to market, protecting crops against infestation, water retention and water preservation. Israel's really, and in water delivery, Israel's been very instrumental in providing water to outlying villages in many African underdeveloped countries. So obviously the Medrash is speaking about Am Yisrael's role in representing Hashem and justifying the existence of our universe, but I think in our day, with the rebirth of the State of Israel and the rebirth of some of that universalist identity, I think we've seen Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael at the forefront at a technical level. But it quotes Shlomo HaMelech's tefillah. When Shlomo HaMelech lives right in the middle of that great universalist period, you could claim that probably the greatest universalist period for the Jewish people was a 900-year span from Yetzias Mitzrayim till the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And Jews were relevant. People visited. Shiva sent emissaries. Chiram built the Beis HaMikdash. Shlomo envisions the Beis HaMikdash as a Beisi. Beis Tefillah Yikarei L'chol HaAmim. Of course, this is Yeshaya's statement, but Shlomo in his Tefillah, inaugurating the Beis HaMikdash, is quite open, and in some ways he even shades it. When he talks about Am Yisrael, he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you should answer people based on their merit. Kechol derachav. This is in Divrei Hayamim, Perek Vav, Divrei Hayamim Beis. But when he describes Hashem answering Gentiles, this is in Melachim Aleph, Perek Ches, V'yasisa, Kechol asher yikroi lecha hanachri. You should answer whatever their requests are, whatever their solicitations are. So it's almost as if he's a little bit more liberal and a little bit more forbearing. He asks Hashem to be a little bit more generous with Gentiles than he is with Jews. I mean, that particular tikkun aside, but it's clear that Shlomo envisions the Beis HaMikdash not just as a parochial site for ritual ceremonies for the Jewish people, but as a conduit for international prayer. So it's important for us every once in a while to broaden our historical vision, and not just to think about the last 200 years, or the last 500 years, or even the last 2,000 years of Jewish history, but to realize that Jewish history unfolds in waves, and there are certain waves which seemed more universalist, and certain waves which seemed more nationalist, and the world at large today can't reconcile the two. I feel that very acutely. I'm a settler, and I see my settling of Israel as divine will, and prophetic fulfillment, and messianic achievement, and paving the way for a world in which the entire reality, the entire human race, benefits and prospers on their terms, not as Jews, but on their terms. So my arch universalist activity is seen as a roadblock to peace, and I'm excoriated, and I'm seen as a ritualistic, tribalistic settler who is abusing the rights of other people. Again, I'm very respectful of people's rights here, because we're not yet in the time of Messiah, of Mashiach. But it's an important medrash, again, because it reminds us of those two agendas. It reminds us that the world is still broken. It reminds us, as the medrash ends, that one day the world will be repaired. And part of that repair will be everyone's ability to acknowledge the overlap and the synchronicity between Am Yisrael's needs and Am Yisrael's trajectory and the world's prosperity. And that's how the medrash ends. And one day the medrash says, people will flock to Yerushalayim based on the pasuk in Zechariah, and 10 people will hold on to the tzitzis of every Jew. And it's such an ironic image, because tzitzis are typically seen as a very ritualistic, localized, particularistic symbol. Jews wear tzitzis, no one else wears tzitzis. But the very tzitzis, and they remind us of mitzvos, 613 mitzvos, there's chartem is called mitzvosai, and those are mitzvos that Gentiles, even at their best, are not obligated to perform. So tzitzis seems very, very parochial, very unique, but the tzitzis are lifelines to humanity to clasp and to clutch and to grab and to travel with us to Yerushalayim and travel with us to that better state of utopia and universal prosperity. So it's an important medrash that has to be sounded from time to time, our ability, A, to recognize the overlap between our unique calling as Jews and our universal responsibilities, and number two, that unfortunately the world is broken and isn't able to sense that overlap, but this shouldn't deter us from pursuing it, even though at this point they can't be merged, they can't be bonded. It's almost as if we have to pursue two different agendas that seem to be dichotomous, but ultimately are similar.